help connect them with St. Croix Hospice care teams. So St. Croix Hospice, our mission is to deliver the highest quality hospice care. So at St. Croix Hospice, we will work together with integrity and collaboration efforts. We'll hold ourselves and each other accountable for our actions, treat one another with respect while we strive for excellence in providing hospice care. So today's objectives are, a little bit of hospice history, cover the benefits of hospice and where it's provided. We'll also talk about the hospice care team, who they are and their responsibilities, what makes a person eligible for hospice care, and then lastly, and most importantly in my mind, is discuss some of the prevailing and popular myths and misconceptions and provide the correct information pertaining to hospice care. So you matter because of who you are, and you matter to the last moment of your life. We will do all we can, not only to help you die peacefully, but to also live until you die. Now, this is a quote from Dame Cicely Saunders, really the founder of the current hospice or popular hospice movement. She first trained as a nurse, then a social worker, and then finally as a physician, and founded the first hospice in London in 1967. It really revolutionized the way society cares for the ill, the dying, and the bereaved. A little bit about hospice history in the US. The first hospice was started in 1974, but the Medicare benefit, the hospice Medicare benefit was enacted in 1982, but it really took until 1983 for hospice to become more of a mainstream healthcare choice. And that's because hospice was introduced as a nationally guaranteed benefit under the healthcare reform proposal in 1993. And now it's really an accepted part of the healthcare continuum. A few recent facts about hospice care in the US. And these facts are from the 2020 edition of National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization. In 2018, there were more than 1.5 million patients that received hospice care in the US. In that same year, there were more than 4,600 hospice providers, and most are freestanding independent entities like St. Croix Hospice, and a much smaller portion are part of a hospital system or a healthcare agency. Surveys of 94% of those families who had a loved one cared for by a hospice team rated their care as very good to excellent. So the early mandates of hospice. Hospice recognizes dying as part of the normal process of living. It focuses on maintaining quality at the end of life. It neither hastens or postpones death. And through appropriate care, patients and their families may be free to attain a degree of mental and spiritual preparation for death. And all of these hold true today. Hospice care is considered the model for quality, compassionate care for people facing a life-limiting illness. It provides expert medical care, pain and symptom management, and emotional and spiritual support tailored to meet a patient's wishes and their needs. Hospice care is focused on comfort care while maintaining a person's quality of life. So what is this benefit and who is it meant for? So this comes directly from the Medicare.gov site. So to be eligible to elect hospice care under Medicare, an individual must be entitled to the Part A and be certified as being terminally ill. And an individual is considered terminally ill if the medical prognosis of their life expectancy is 6 months or less, if that illness runs its natural course. And hospice admits a patient only on the recommendation of the hospice medical director with input from that patient's attending physician. So let's dig a little deeper. So hospice care is covered by Medicare, Medicaid, VA benefits, and most private insurers. It is a fully funded Medicare and Medicaid benefit, which covers all services related to the terminal illness. There are no co-pays or out-of-pocket costs. But for patients with private insurance, there may be some sort of deductible or out-of-pocket costs that need to be met. Hospice care is meant for anyone with a life-limiting illness that, if left to run its normal course, that person's prognosis is 6 months or less. However, it does not mean there's only a six-month limit to hospice care services. After that initial six-month period, each hospice beneficiary receives an unlimited number of additional 60-day periods, and people can live for years on hospice benefit as long as they truly qualify and still meet those hospice qualifications. So the benefits of hospice, there's three main ones: the physical, the psychosocial, and the spiritual care management. But hospice care also includes alternative therapies, volunteer support, and grief and bereavement support. So the physical care management is overseen by the hospice medical directors and the nursing team. They are the experts in pain and symptom management that is associated with end of life. Hospice provides all medications, supplies, and medical equipment related to that terminal diagnosis. Registered nurse and hospice aide visits are scheduled during the week, not only to provide care, but to also educate the patient, family, and caregivers about the care plan. In addition, nurses are on call 24/7, 365 days a week to answer questions or provide urgent care when needed. We have dietitians that also may help with a patient's end-of-life nutrition needs to provide education to caregivers about nutritional changes in someone reaching end-of-life. The psychosocial care management is the responsibility of a hospice social worker. Some of their responsibilities include conducting psychosocial assessments, assisting in end-of-life planning completion, and educating patients and families on the available resources and support systems, both within that hospice agency and in the community. Now, the psychosocial assessments of patients and their families is important to determine their psychological, emotional, spiritual, and social needs. And this information is vital to the care team so they may develop an effective and a compassionate care plan. Spiritual care management is a responsibility and managed by the hospice chaplain. Their main responsibility is to provide non-denominational, emotional, and spiritual support to patients, their families, and caregivers, whether they're family or whether they're facility caregivers. They are trained to support a patient's medical care from a spiritual and emotional perspective. They may act as liaisons between the members of community clergy and hospice patients. And additionally, chaplains provide bereavement services, including phone calls, visits, and memorial services to family members upon the death of their loved one. So pre-COVID, alternative therapies and volunteer services were part of the hospice care team. Alternative therapies included music therapy and massage therapy, which were intended to provide peace, relaxation, and joy, and the massage therapy also to help with pain relief and the important touch at end of life. Volunteer services prior to COVID, Medicare required volunteer hours to equal at least 5% of a hospice provider's total patient care hours. And examples of that could be companionship visits, pet therapy. At St. Croix Hospice, we do end-of-life vigils, and we believe nobody should die alone, and we had dedicated volunteers to assist with end-of-life vigils. Some of these things are starting to come back bit by bit as the vaccinations are increasing and things are changing, with that COVID pandemic. Lastly, there's grief and bereavement support, and that has always been offered. So some things covered under that include anticipatory grief counseling that can be provided by the social worker or the chaplain while the patient is still living. After the patient's death, our team can help navigate available community resources needed during that time of grief. And St. Croix Hospice provides bereavement services for 13 months after the patient passes. 13 months, it includes a lot of firsts. It includes a lot of anniversaries without that loved one. And people grieve differently and at different rates. And we don't want anybody to be without the support they need during this difficult time. As I mentioned, making the most of life, hospice is often really equated with that end-of-life medical care, but it does reach far beyond that physical condition to cover both the spiritual and psychosocial needs of the patient, as well as the family and caregivers. The hospice team's expertise in medical care assures a high level of awareness and care of symptom management and pain control, ultimately improving the quality of life. A hospice nurse and aide are assigned to each patient to manage these medical needs. And the freedom to choose. One of the great fears of terminally ill patients is losing control over what happens to them. Hospice supports this individual, the individual wishes of each patient and family. It's vitally important to the success of hospice care that the patients make their choices known and that these choices are respected right until the end of life. Additional benefits of hospice. So preventing hospitalizations and rehospitalizations, studies have shown hospice care can dramatically reduce hospitalizations. And this is possible because of a well-constructed plan of care, including that interdisciplinary team approach, including the nurses, the aides, social workers, et cetera. I talked about the 24/7 availability. Hospice teams offer patients and families access to professional care 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, including nights, weekends, and holidays. And then for the continued communication and education, there's a lot of anxiety that surrounds the end of life. And it comes simply from not having those answers. So with hospice, there's always a ready resource with reliable information, guidance, and reassurance for the patient, family, and facility staff. So part of our nurse manager's role is to make certain caregivers, whether they're at home or they're in a facility, understand how to best care for that patient and what to expect at end of life. Due in part to COVID, our teams are providing care to more patients in either their own home or their family's home today. And our team, we understand that family members are often not trained caregivers. Our team will provide the necessary education and instruction to best care for the patient and do so safely for all. So let's talk about patient-centered care. So patient-centered care is focused on comfort care, allowing patient to accomplish goals in the time remaining and die a natural death wherever they call home, surrounded by family and friends. Continuous pain assessment and pain control is a core principle of in practice in hospice care. And so we will do this while balancing the patient's quality of life, which is equally important. And then changing needs. As an illness progresses, physical, psychosocial, and spiritual needs change for both the patient and the family. And hospice will meet these changing needs by altering that plan of care. That plan of care is intended to be fluid, adapting to these changes. And regarding respect for patients, by focusing on the patient's needs and treating each individual and family as unique and special, the hospice team fosters the patient's sense of respect and control over their care. Hospice also promotes patient autonomy. An appropriate hospice death is one in which dying is in accordance with the patient and the family's wishes and in congruence with their life. And lastly, security. Hospice orchestrates a community of caregivers, including staff, volunteers, family, friends, and community resources, so the patient and family feel the security of not traveling in this journey alone. Here's just a pictorial example of that patient-centered care, patients at the center, and all those different disciplines, all those different methods of support really surround the patient, communicate with each other to best support the patient as well as the family. Now we'll talk about facility-centered care. So facility staff are an important part of the primary caregivers. And when I say facility, I mean assisted living, skilled nursing facilities. So communication is key, and hospice relies heavily on that facility team. Because we're caring for a patient in their facility, we have to follow the regulations and protocols. We complement the care provided by the facility staff, and we promote collaboration and customization that supports the families, patients, and that facility team. So we really rely on that facility team to be our eyes on the patient when we are not providing direct care. So when there's a change in condition or a decline in health occurs, we need that facility team to understand what is going on and reach out to us. So our teams are ready and available whenever we are needed, especially after hours and on weekends. And again, all this hospice care is over and above the care provided by the facility care teams. It's truly that extra care. All right. So research indicates for certain terminally ill patients who choose hospice care, they may live an average of 29 days longer than those that did not choose hospice care. There's many reasons and theories regarding this. Why do they live longer? It could be because they experience fewer hospitalizations, fewer doctor's visits and invasive treatments that may just not be as simply taxing on the patient's health. Surveys have shown that 36% of patients that reported pain that affected sleep at their first hospice care visit, by that next visit, it was reduced to 8%. So we know that continued pain, you know, as well as not getting adequate sleep, may both have a negative effect on a person's health, both draining their energy and then interfering with healing abilities. If anybody is interested in more information on this, this was actually published in March of 2007 in the Journal of Pain and Symptom Management. Family members reported greater satisfaction in care of their loved one and support with hospice care, and facility and community staff have been shown to be able to provide a higher quality of care when residents and families choose hospice care. So family members and facility caregivers are not, and they're not expected to be experts in hospice care and end of life needs. So that's why having a hospice care team is so important to ensure that quality of care and support. So I like to think of there's three umbrellas of hospice care, and we discussed the first one already, that interdisciplinary team, the aides, the nurses, social workers, et cetera, that provide that direct care to the patient and support for the family. The second one is durable medical equipment related to the terminal diagnosis. So that includes, I mean, that may include hospital beds and mattresses, wheelchairs, walkers, oxygen supplies, bedside commodes. And the third umbrella is really the medication and supplies. So the medications both relating to that terminal diagnosis, and then those medications needed to provide comfort and pain control. And supplies can include incontinence products, wound care items, catheters, things like that. There are four levels of hospice care: routine, continuous, general inpatient care, and respite care. And again, determining the level of care, you know, qualifying for hospice, it's the patient's primary care provider and that hospice medical director. They must identify that the patient is terminally ill with a life expectancy of 6 months or less. Again, that's what Medicare puts on it. But again, we have patients that live longer than 6 months on hospice care. So let's talk about the first one. And this is probably greater than 98% of the type of care provided to patients on hospice. It's the routine home care. This occurs wherever the patient calls home. It includes several services like the nurses and the aides, the medications, the supplies. You know, all of the care team conducts visits with the patients. The medical equipment and supplies are delivered and utilized wherever that patient calls home. In addition, there may be lab and therapy services depending on the situation with the patient included. Continuous home care. This must be provided when a patient is at their own home or a family's home, not in any type of facility. It's typically short-term in nature and used during periods of crisis to achieve management of symptoms. And although it's called continuous, it does not need to be continuous, but it must be a total of 8 hours or more within a 24-hour period. And some examples requiring continuous care could be unrelieved pain, anxiety or panic attacks, and or a breakdown in the primary caregiver support system. General inpatient care is similar to the continuous care. It's when patients have short-term symptoms so severe they cannot get adequate treatment at home and must be cared for in a type of facility. Symptoms requiring inpatient care are the same as those requiring continuous care. And general inpatient care is delivered in a setting, like I said, outside the home, most often in a hospice unit, skilled nursing facility, or a hospital. And lastly, there's respite care. So respite care services, I mean, they can really be more for the family than the patient. Again, the patient must be being cared for in outside of a facility, in their own home or a family's home. If the patient doesn't meet that criteria to qualify them for continuous care or inpatient care, but when the family's having a difficult time, respite care could be an option. It's when the patient's family is the primary source of care and just cannot meet their loved one needs, maybe due to caregiver stress. A patient then can be temporarily admitted to an inpatient environment like a skilled nursing facility to give the family a needed break or respite. There is a 5-day limit on this respite care so that once that period ends, the patient is discharged and would return home or they could be placed into a facility for full time. And respite care may be provided more than once, but it's really done on an occasional basis. We talked a little bit about this. Hospice care, really, it's provided anywhere a patient calls home. Their home, family members' home, any of the skilled nursing facilities, senior apartments, assisted living facility. You know, no one is turned away due to race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, disabilities, national origin, or ability to pay. One example, too, is we have a lot of snowbirds coming back from their winter homes in Florida and Texas. For instance, St. Croix Hospice, we don't provide hospice care in those communities, in those states. So what we do is we hand off hospice care. We work with a family to determine which hospice agency they want to work with. When that patient lands in their winter home, that agency provides care. And again, they hand that patient back off to us when they come home for the summer. Here's a few examples of what might make somebody appropriate for hospice. So people with heart disease, chronic heart failure, if they've got pulmonary disease, many of the cancers, liver and kidney disease, and the dementias, whether it's Alzheimer's, Lewy body dementia, or others, and stroke are just a few examples. This is what we call a silent transition tool. It lists multiple symptoms and complications to go along with those diagnoses I just talked about that may indicate that someone's health is declining and beginning to transition to becoming hospice appropriate. The more symptoms that are checked off on this list, the more likely that person is ready for hospice care. So anybody that has had increased or multiple hospitalizations over the past year, maybe they've had a significant weight gain or a weight loss. Maybe they need assistance with the activities of daily living, including dressing, eating, bathing. These are just some of the things that can help make a patient or a person appropriate for hospice. The silent transition tool is, you know, something we can provide if anybody is interested into looking at that or using this. All right, my favorite part, hospice myths. All right, so my loved one is already receiving care from a facility. You know, what more can hospice do? In reality, hospice will complement the facility care by providing additional one-on-one care and support for you and your loved one at end of life. In addition, St. Croix Hospice provides that 13 months of grief and bereavement support for families, and that's not something a typical facility is able to provide. Myth: only a physician can request a referral for hospice care. In fact, anyone can make a hospice referral, including a family member, caregiver, clergy, a nurse, or the potential patient themselves. I worry my loved one will die more quickly if signed up for hospice care. You know, research we talked about does show certain terminally ill patients may live an average of 29 days longer than patients without hospice care. Hospice is intended to neither hasten or prolong death. Hospice care is available for patients with only days or weeks to live. This is one that I hear a lot. But the fact is, anyone with a life expectancy of 6 months or less may begin hospice care. Patients who live longer than those 6 months may continue to be eligible. And while hospice, you know, it certainly helps patients and families during that medical crisis, the fullest benefit occurs when pain and symptoms are managed and patients have time to make personal and spiritual connections. The longer that a hospice team has to care for a patient and support the family, both the patient and the family get to know their care team and can really trust the care that's being provided. A myth: once you decide on hospice, you can't go back. But the fact is, patients can revoke hospice participation at any time. Their medical condition may improve, or maybe they decide to pursue curative treatment again. It doesn't mean that they can't reapply for hospice at a later date. So when I do consults for patients and families, you know, I emphasize this point, but I also ask for a 2-week trial. I think it's fair when somebody signs up for hospice to give whatever hospice they choose that team 2 weeks to see if it is exactly what they're looking for, make that connection. But again, patients can revoke at any time and sign up later. Myth: my loved one cannot afford to pay for additional healthcare services. Again, hospice is covered by Medicare, Medicaid, the VA benefit, and most private insurances. And while there may be a deductible with private insurances, oftentimes when a person reaches the point of needing hospice care, their deductibles have already been met, you know, with hospital stays, testing, and et cetera. You cannot see your primary doctor after you begin hospice. The truth is, you may continue to see your primary care doctor for as long as you would like. Hospice works in partnership with the primary care physicians. Our hospice team, at minimum, every 2 weeks, provides an update on our patients to their primary care. And depending on the primary care's wishes, we may do so more often. We want to keep them involved in their patients' care. And finally, the myth is that hospice means giving up hope. The fact is, hospice does not mean giving up hope. It redefines hope for patients and their families by focusing on maximizing the quality of life remaining, based on the patient's preferences, of course. It allows them to make the most of the time that they have left, living life as fully as possible. You know, we deserve good medical care from birth until death, and hospice care is meant to celebrate the lives of patients and provide comfort during their end-of-life journey and dignity in death. Here are some of the resources that I utilize for today's presentation. I also find that Medicare.gov, that website is also very helpful in answering hospice questions as well.